How many of you did your homework? All right, we got a few hands here. All right. So you read through Deuteronomy 4, 32 through 40, and that's where we're going to spend some time this morning and probably next time also. I don't know that we'll get through all of what we want to talk about, but that's okay. We're not on a schedule here. All right. But in this particular part of our study, we're focusing on knowing God through the experience or experiencing His grace. And the text in Deuteronomy chapter 4 takes us back to a point where we can focus on where Moses is reminding the Israelite people of their experience in getting to know God. Okay? And we're going to focus on a couple of key passages in this. But as I told you last week as we were finishing up on this, there are four basic areas that we want to really look at and examine in this. The first one is the uniqueness of this experience that they are having or have had as Moses challenges them. Keep in mind that what's happening here is that these are the children of the generation that came out of Egypt, okay? The generation before them has all perished in the wilderness because of their disobedience to God, and this is now 40 years later that they're getting ready to enter into the Promised Land. And so before they're going to enter in and take possession of this land, Moses is reminding them of how they got to that point. You say, and so as we look at this experience, that's one of the things that we want to do. Let's talk about the uniqueness of this. So as he talks to these children, that is, these are people who came out of Egypt in bondage. They were children when they came out, okay, but they experienced that anyway. Okay, they experienced what God had done. Moses is reminding them of the things, the events that occurred, he says, before their very eyes, okay? Let me get somebody to read the text for us that we're talking about. Deuteronomy chapter 4, 32 through 40. Who's got that wants to read this morning? Okay, Pat? Okay. The uniqueness of the experience. Again, Moses is reminding this generation of the things that occurred before their very eyes. These are things they not only witnessed but experienced. And what's the difference between witnessing something and experiencing something? You need to understand that. Okay. You're actually involved in it. You might witness an accident, you know, on the road somewhere, but you're not necessarily involved in the accident, right? But you saw what happened. Is there what's the difference between those two experiences, so to speak?
Witnesses rarely ever get sold or bloodied or have their lives permanently affected. You experience something, it will change you forever.
Yeah. Okay. You know, there's a big difference between seeing events unfold and actually being a part of those events that are unfolding, whether they're good or bad events, you see. A witness that has seen something can tell their perspective based on what they saw, you see, but how different is the perspective of those who are actually involved in that thing going to be? You see, it's going to be very, very different. You see, so the experience itself, Moses is pointing out to them, reminding them, these are things you experienced. You saw these things with your own eyes. You heard these things with your own ears. You were there. You see, you were a part of these things, these events as they were unfolding. So, in other words, for this generation of Israelites, this is a historical reality. Okay? Now, that's an important part of this, and we're going to come back to this a little bit later. But again, keep in mind here, you know, there's only one particular time when something happens. There's only one opportunity to have that thing be a historical reality. Does that make sense? In other words, for the people that are involved in any particular event, it is a historical reality. Okay? But after that event is over, okay, it's no longer a historical reality for anyone except those people. You can tell the story about what happened to anybody you want to. You can write a book about it. But it's not a historical reality for anyone else that did not participate in it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You see? So, you know, we can read about it. For us, it's historical, right? And we look at it and say, yeah, that was real. We believe that really happened, but it was not a historical reality for us in the sense that we weren't there. We did not experience it. The best we can do is read about it. You see? Because we weren't there when it happened. These folks were there. So in that sense, it is a historical reality for them. And so Moses calls their attention to the uniqueness of these events that they've experienced. And he asks a series of rhetorical questions, so to speak. Let me get somebody to go back and read again. But this time, pick up at verse 23 and read from 23 down to verse 34. Who wants to read that for us? All right, Lynette.
Thank you.
Okay? Read verse 34 also. Okay. In the first part of this, what is Moses really doing? What's he talking about here? What? Okay. In the first part, though, he's basically giving them a warning, isn't he? That look, if you go and you chase after the gods of other people and so forth, then you're going to be in trouble. I mean, that's just a paraphrase, okay? But that's basically what he's doing. He's basically warning them. So you get into this land and you start going and you're worshiping carved images that can't smell, they can't speak, they can't taste, they can't do anything for themselves, then you're going to find yourselves in some hot water. Okay? And then he asks a couple of questions, rhetorical questions. He's not asking for specific answers from the people. He's challenging them to think about what they are going to be facing. Okay? Look at what he says here. Verse 32, "Ask now of the days that are past, which were before you." Now, these are days that they did not experience, aren't they? Okay? So he's telling them, you go and check it out, okay? And you find out about what happened before you came along, okay? "Since the day that God created man on the earth and asked from one end of heaven to the other whether such a great thing as this has ever happened or was ever heard of." Okay, so has anything like what you experienced ever occurred before? Is what he's drawing their attention to. Okay? And you can go and you can seek and you can try to find, and you can ask anybody you want to if anything since the day of creation has ever occurred like what you have experienced. Okay? And then he goes on. "Did any people ever hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as you have heard and still live?" Has that ever occurred before? You see, that's what he wants them to think about. No one has experienced what you have experienced in the history of mankind. You see? He goes on. "Or has any God ever attempted to go and take a nation for himself from the midst of another nation?" Which is exactly what he did by taking Israel out of Egypt, right? You see? Has any God ever attempted to do that before? See? And then he talks specifically about the ways that he went about doing that, okay? "By trials, by signs, by wonders, and by war, by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and by great deeds of terror, all of which the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes." Has never been done before in the history of mankind. Okay? Now, how should that make them feel? Special? Okay. I think it might have made them feel spatial. I'm not sure if special, but because they certainly weren't all together, were they? But absolutely, his point is for them to understand how special they really are before God. That he has done something that has never been done in the history of the world. And no other people have ever experienced anything like this before in the history of the world. See, it is unique to them, you see, for all time. Has anybody ever experienced anything like that since?
See? Yeah, one of the things to keep in mind here is They had, however, been wandering in the wilderness, and they had seen the pillar of fire in the daytime and the pillar of, you know, or cloud at daytime and fire at night. So there's a little back and forth here, you know, with God and these folks. You know, they had heard of the plague, you know, possibly as infants or, you know,
yeah, as children, there's, yeah, some on the older end of the spectrum probably would have experienced it.
Yeah,
they as children.
Yeah, but the adults, of course, came out of
it. Oh, yeah, they're gone.
They're gone, yeah. And yeah, it is rather interesting the way God, you know, does this. He asks them to think about everything you've heard, you know, from your
right.
Fathers about the history of the world, right. You know, the oral history, you know, is anything else like it? And the answer is no. Nothing even close.
Yeah. Nothing ever occurred like that before, and nothing has ever occurred like that since. See? And here's another important part of this whole thing is to understand, and Steve, as you were talking here a moment ago, as we said before, you know, the first generation, the adults that came out, and it basically everyone who was, all the men who were above the age of being fighting men. In other words, you know, once they reached that age of being a fighter, they were considered adults. They all perished in the wilderness. But did they not experience the same unique things that Moses is telling this generation? They experienced it as adults. Okay? But the experience was lost on them. See? And that's why they perished in the wilderness. The experience was lost on them. And so what Moses is doing here is warning this next generation that experienced it also to say, don't let that experience be lost on you. When you go into this promised land, take that experience with you. You see? Because you have experienced something that God has done that He has never done before and will never do again. They had experienced God's loving grace in a way that no one had ever experienced before. See? And they got to know the God of grace and the God of love in a way that no one had ever gotten to know in that way before. So it was truly a very unique experience for them in that regard. Okay? Let's talk then about the content, specifically the content of this experience. What are we really talking about here? There are really two primary experiences that Moses is talking about in this passage, okay, in which Israel came to know God through this unique experience. The two primary events or experiences are, first of all, the redemption out of Egypt. Okay? The Exodus. And then the second one is the revelation of God to the Israelite people at Sinai. So Moses, in this passage we're looking at, he's referring to both of these events here, okay, for them. So let's talk, first of all, about the redemption out of Egypt, the Exodus. You find the complete story of the Exodus in Exodus chapters 1 through 15. Okay? And it really is the first great act of God's redemption that's recorded in the Old Testament. Okay? The second, it is rather second in terms of great events or acts of God's redemption, it's second in the Bible only to the cross of Christ. Okay? Two great acts of redemption. One, the Exodus, and the second one, the cross. The Exodus proved God's power over His enemies. Pharaoh, the Egyptian army. And He also proved His love and faithfulness in keeping the promise that He made to their forefathers, and particularly Abraham. We talked about in our previous studies that this all comes back to the promise that God made to Abraham, doesn't it? See? And this event that they have experienced the first act of redemption of God keeping that promise. Okay, go back and think about the promise that God made to Abraham. What were some of the aspects of that promise? What did God tell him? Okay. All nations of the earth would be blessed through him, okay? And, of course, that's the salvation that's open to everyone. But even before that part of it, what other part of the promises were there? Yeah, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to make you the father of many nations. You see, in other words, he's going to make a nation out of Abraham. And is that not what he did there in Egypt? He took a man and his family, 72 people altogether that went into Egypt during the famine. Okay? So they went in as a family. They came out as a nation of over 400,000 people. So God formed a nation. Okay? And what Moses is reminding them of is that God redeemed that nation. As he said, he took one nation out of another. See? And he did it by some mighty powerful works. You see? If you don't think they're powerful works, just go read the plagues and see. Think about how many of those could you do. Okay? So he's reminding them of this particular event where God has redeemed them and has, at least in part, he's kept his promise that he made to Abraham and to their other forefathers. Okay? The New Testament emphasizes God's power over his enemies and his grace and love in the cross of Christ. Okay. So what we are seeing here is two events that are paralleling one another. Okay. The Exodus or the deliverance of the Israelite people from bondage in Egypt and the deliverance of all men from the bondage of sin through the cross of Christ. So that experience, redemption, the second part is the revelation of God at Sinai, where, in other words, God brought the Israelite people out of Egypt, and that wasn't enough. Okay, it was not sufficient enough for God to just simply bring this nation of people that were there in slavery in Egypt and allow them or cause them to be freed from that bondage. Say, okay, I'm tired of these people who I love being mistreated by the Egyptians. I'm going to provide a way for them to get out of there and be away from that bondage and so forth, right? So he allows them to cross the Red Sea. They're in the wilderness. And now God says, okay, I got you out of that predicament you were in. Have a nice day. Y'all take care. Be good and so forth, right? No. That wasn't sufficient. You see? There was still another experience that they had to have. You see? And that was the revelation of God to them at Mount Sinai. Okay? That God would bring them to that place. Okay, this particular primary event is recorded in Exodus 19. Okay, in the Deuteronomy text, Moses calls them back to what God had done at that event. He revealed himself to them. Don't lose the significance of that. You see? The fact that God had revealed himself to these people after he brought them out of Sinai. Or out of Egypt, rather. Okay? He didn't just get them out, as we said a moment ago, and say, okay, hope you all make it and take care of yourselves. Instead, he brought them to a specific place so that he could reveal himself to them. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 10 through 12. Let me get somebody to read that for us, please. Deuteronomy 4, verses 10 through 12. Who's got it? You see, God brought the Israelite people to Sinai for what purpose? So that he could speak to them. In other words, he wanted to communicate with them. Just like he had done with Moses before this whole thing started. See? When God called Moses up to the mountain with the burning bush, and he commissioned him to go back and get this whole thing started, you say, what was it that God told him was going to be the sign to him of what he was telling him? Anybody recall? Somebody go over to Exodus chapter 3 and verse 12 and read that for us, please. What did God tell Moses would be the sign to verify what he was telling him when he spoke to him out of the bush? What is it? Don't mumble. Yeah. This will be a sign to you. You say, that you and the people will serve me on this mountain. In other words, I'm sending you from here to go and get them and do what? Bring them back here. You see? So I can talk to them just like I'm talking to you. You see? Just like I'm talking to you. In other words, God is telling them, look, I've got some things to say. And I've got some things to say to you. Okay? You exclusively. So I want you to come here so that I can tell you what I want to tell you. The purpose of God bringing the Israelites to Mount Sinai was so that he could talk to them and reveal himself to them. To communicate to them about what? What did he communicate to them about? He gave them the law, but why? But why? What were the plans for? You got to know this. So they live by it, but what? To build a nation?
For the redemption of man.
How about relationship? Yeah, that too. I mean, all of those things you said are right, but the most important part of it is that God brings them and says, look, I'm your God, and you are my people. We are in relationship with one another. God's saying, I want to have a relationship with you where I am your God, and you are my chosen people, and I will take care of you. That's what he wanted to communicate with them. And Moses is telling them, has any other God ever done anything like that? You can look through history and you can look at the gods of all the nations that they claim to have, and can you find any God that has ever done anything like that for his people, that has spoken to them because he wanted a relationship with them? how much of a relationship you're going to have with a piece of stone or a rock or a piece of wood
or a golden calf.
Or a golden calf. You see? So what we need to understand is that God did not bring them out of Egypt into Mount Sinai just to give them a bunch of laws, although He gave them the laws. You see? He didn't bring them out of Egypt into Mount Sinai just so that He could kind of, you know, say, okay, if you live this way, things will be better. He came there, brought them there rather primarily to establish a relationship with them that He wanted to have, with this nation that He had formed in keeping with the promise that He made to Abraham. See? Now, what does that tell us? Great day, we're out of time. What does that tell us about what God wants more than anything? A relationship. A relationship. He doesn't want ritual. He doesn't want this to just follow a bunch of rules, although He gave them rituals, did He not? And He gave them rules and laws. But what was the purpose of those things? So they would live in relationship with Him. That's what it was all about. You see? As we finish up, let's say this last thing here is to keep in mind something we had mentioned before, that God, before they got to Sinai, okay, He did what? Before they got to Sinai, they had to be released from bondage and slavery, right? And God did that first. Yeah, He did that first and then brought them to Sinai and said, okay, based on what I have done for you already, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to give you my laws, and if you will do these things and keep these things, then I will do that. No. He did it for them first and then brought them to Sinai so that He could establish clearly the relationship He wanted to have with them. Okay? Yeah, we're out of time. What you got, real quick? Exactly. That's the last part of my notes on this section. I wanted to cover that. We didn't have enough time, but that's all right. We'll pick up here next week, all right, and finish up this particular section. Thank you.